Hey, my name is Zenu, and you're listening to Anti-Moonboy News. We got a good one for you today. We're going to be covering Michael Saylor talking about selling Bitcoin. We're going to be covering Justin Berman's appearance on Monero Talk. We got some updates on full chain membership proofs, a lot of information in there. So we're going to unpack that. It was a great interview. And I'm also going to go on a couple rants. So it's going to be a good episode. Of course, you can go to antimoonboy.com to follow my website, which I didn't update this past week. I freaking forgot to make a post for the episode last week. But I have links to everything on there, including my merch and the RSS feed and all that. So you can find that all on antimoonboy.com. But we're going to start off with some discussions, some rants, I guess, to start the episode. I was a little testy this weekend. I was in a bad mood, and what better way to solve a bad mood? You do a little shit posting. Yeah, you gotta rattle the cage sometimes. And you know, I'm not sure what set me off on DarkFi. We're gonna talk a little DarkFi right now. But honestly, this project is just annoying me lately quite a bit. And I think what annoys me the most about this project is that they have some actual potential here because they have the cultural and philosophical side really done in a way that's much different than other projects, where they're not afraid to talk about crypto anarchism. That's actually pretty unique in cryptocurrency. Not a lot of projects like to go there, especially projects that are based on decentralized finance. I like their art designs too, and some of their writings I think are pretty cool. Some of them I don't like as much, but you know, I like creativity, as I am a creative, and this is how I give back to my fellow cypherpunks. Because I am very good, yeah, hosting a show, having some fun here, and the feedback I've gotten for this show has kind of shown that. But I'm also a critic. I like to think of myself as somebody who is looking at cryptocurrency in a serious way and not just as number go up stuff, and that's why I created Anti-Moonboy, right? So anyway, why am I saying all this? Well, with DarkFi, what really pisses me off about this project is it's been like, how long have they been in development now? Like 4 or 5 years? And yeah, they don't have anything that works yet, except for this broken IRC that's like really bloated. I have a video about it. I don't even really care as much about that. But the thing that they haven't done is release their tokenomics. And it's been a while, guys. And that is such a red flag when a organization that kind of is, you know, introducing decentralized finance, especially because we've seen some doozies of pre-mines and, you know, staking and all this like nonsense that's just buried into the supply, right? And they haven't done any of that with their project yet. And this has been asked of them many times, and they continue to just deflect it. Oh, yeah. We're working on it, kind of thing. And it's like, what are you guys waiting for? Because the longer this goes on, the more I think this is just a scam. You know, you have this great mindset here of, you know, introducing decentralized finance with anonymity. That's a great idea. Apparently, they also will have built-in privacy. They're going to be using some pretty powerful cryptography. I think that's great. But it doesn't mean much if you're going to have a 30% pre-mine on it. So that's the thing. I mean, I've been kind of like pushing this over, you know, the past like year and a half on my show. I've mentioned DarkFi a few times. I've like said, hey, guys, you know. And this past week, I'm like, ah, fuck it. So I went on a whole rant on Twitter. I was fucking annoyed. Because it's like, come on, what's going on here? And so the other thing, too, is this whole project. It's like what they've done, really, is they've released this IRC, called Dark IRC, which honestly is bloated. When I used it a year ago, when I made my video, it was getting spam attacked. I don't know if that's still happening, but it was like totally, you couldn't even use it, right? And also, it's branded as like the most anonymous chat. It's literally just IRC that you can use with Tor, but you can already use IRC with Tor anyway. I don't know. That's not really a big selling point for me. Maybe like I respect that they did that. You know, they made something, but that's like all they've really have released yet, so far, because all their other stuff is just, you know, kind of still being tested and all that for this you know, this cryptocurrency token. I think it's called Dark. I don't like that name either, but whatever. But we don't even have the tokenomics, so it's kind of just like, what are we doing here? You know? So that's a nicer way of me, because on Twitter I was being a dick. I'll admit that. I was being probably a little too, but I'm rattling the cage. You know, I'm trying to get people to talk about this because I do actually care about projects doing well. Because the other thing is, what DarkFi did correctly is initially they were going to release as a, I think it was staking initially that they were going to release it. And then they switched to RandomX. And I'm like, okay, this project just got a lot more interesting to me. And so they have the opportunity to be the very first project to launch as a fair distribution with RandomX. I believe they would be the first. And that would really support their crypto anarchism if they did that. You know, because DarkFi, it's not going to cost that much initially. You can still pre-mine, quote unquote, by buying it early. But that's not what we're seeing. Well, we're not seeing anything. They're just being quiet about it. So that's my critique of DarkFi, where they don't really have a working product. And, you know, they're not releasing their tokenomics still. Instead, what they do is they send off, you know, Amir Taki or Rose O'Leary, who seem like cool people. I mean, I've never spoken to Amir. I have spoken to Rose actually at Monerotopia. She was there, but like they kind of go and they do their presentations, and it's a lot of like half baked kind of. You know, the future, we're going to need to have these, you know, communities that are decentralized. And that's well and good. I'm down to have like philosophical discussion, but that's kind of all they're doing. That's like 95% of what they're doing. And that's just not going to do anything. Because I'm being told cypherpunks write code, right? You know, and I do agree with that somewhat. I do think cypherpunks can also just be advocates. You know, I don't think like the gatekeeping there is necessary, but some people believe that. But if that's the case, like what is DarkFi made? Because it seems to me they've made just a lot of philosophical ramblings and podcast appearances, and it's not actually being used. And it kind of just comes off as this cult around Amir Taki. And that's kind of how I feel about the project. So who am I to say this? You know, I'm just some dork with a microphone. You know, I think I have a pretty good understanding of technology. I don't really program anything. You know, I know Bash and some Python. Like, I'm not going to fucking sit here and say I'm a programmer. But again, I'm of the opinion that the best way to, you know, improve free and open source software is to find out what you're good at and do it. And so that's why I, you know, make videos and I try to help people and educate people because that's what I'm good at. And that's why, you know, we've seen some really great growth on this channel. But I think DarkFi, I think people are going to start turning on this project though, because it has been a while. And they still don't really have anything. And the Dark IRC, it's not that good. That's another problem, too, with the project. I'm just laying out my criticisms here, you know, just because I don't really talk about different projects that often. But another thing that, like, kind of I don't really understand is, when you have like a closed off tiny community like that, it's like, how are you going to get new people to come over to it? And I'm not sure they're seeing any growth really with like Dark IRC. I just don't think there's like demand for that, when instead a lot of people just use Simplex because you just download it and it works. Whereas with Dark IRC, you have to like go through some steps to do it. I have a video where I show you how to do it, but it's not like super easy for somebody who like is passionate about crypto anarchism, but like doesn't know the technical side. And I just see that a lot with this project. So that's all I'm going to say on DarkFi. That's my rant on them. I just want them to be better. And I think really the thing they should do is release their tokenomics, like set a date, figure it out. Because if they're just going to be 30% pre-mined, then I'm just not going to bother even talking about them anymore. But, you know, if they really say, you know what, we shouldn't have a pre-mine, or at least make the pre-mine very, very small, then we can start actually maybe start using it, you know. But I don't know. The problem with these DeFi solutions is it's hard to convince people to use something like, you know, Xano or DarkFi or what's another one? Haveno or was it Haven when they were around? It's hard to convince someone to use a project like that when you have something like Ethereum or Binance, because like so many people already use those. And like that, the market for like decentralized finance is mostly normies who are yield farming. Okay. Like you're not going to have like this like sudden growth in crypto anarchism and decentralized communities around the world. I just don't, that's going to be like long, long term. And, yeah, I don't know. I just don't see that happening. But I would love to be wrong. So that is about DarkFi. I just don't see this project doing anything. And I also think a lot of people don't like to call them out because it's so technical and like on the darknet and hard to approach. I'm actually someone who actually went and looked, checked it out, and I'm like not really that impressed. Okay, let's move on to the next rant. I got two rants to open the show. The second one on John McAfee. Yeah, you know what happened was this weekend, I saw like a John McAfee meme posted by someone on Monero where he's heckin' based. He's got like his shirt off with the machine gun. Have you guys seen that? I'm sure you have. And like everyone's like, oh, he's so cool. He represents Monero so well. And I gotta say, that really bothers me. I really, really hate that. And I'm happy I got a lot of likes on that tweet I made. I saw a lot of people were like, yeah, McAfee's a piece of shit. Because he was. I mean, the guy, he was a pump and dump grifter. He had a Twitter account. I swear to God, he had this Twitter account. And every week, every day, really, he would say the name of a cryptocurrency and be like, go. And like he would watch it pump and then he would dump on people. And like I'm sure he sold like some subscription stuff too, so people would buy it. And he was just doing this, and he was just a meme. It was not about privacy. It was not about you know, these ideals we really care about. It was this guy taking advantage of people who didn't know any better, and he was taking their money. And I don't really like that. Just because you can scam people doesn't mean you should, you know? And he did that a lot. And then he would go on these podcasts, he'd be all zooted up. You know, we've all seen the podcast. He's like coked up, you know, just like all zooted. And yeah, he name drops Monero, right? And he does say the word Monero, and everyone's like, wow, he's a big supporter of Monero. But then he name drops like this crap, like ghost chain or whatever, which total scam, pump and dump stuff. And he would do that in every interview where he might talk about Monero, but then he would talk about these blatant scams because he didn't care. He would get a bag for that cryptocurrency, and he would then shill other stuff. Now, like, sponsorships are one thing. Like, if he's working with a project, he's developing it, obviously he can promote it. Like, I'm not saying he should or shouldn't promote things. It's just how often on his Twitter you would see him blatantly pump and dumping cryptocurrencies and being part of that culture where it's just, you know, all like, what are the next up and coming 100Xs? Like, he was like part of that subculture, which is Moonboyism. And I'm sure you're probably surprised by that. On Anti-Moonboy, we don't like Moonboyism here, right? And he was like the face of that for like an entire summer. I remember this, and it was just like, dude, what the fuck, man? So anyway, in defense of McAfee supporters, yeah, he was funny. Okay, I get it. He's a funny dude. The joke that I remember that he did, which I will admit is fucking hilarious, for coronavirus, he wore panties on his face for the coronavirus mask. That's hilarious. I have to give him credit for that one. That's actually really funny. He would occasionally do funny stuff. I get it. He was like basically a lol cow that used to be a hacker, right? But when it comes to actually like taking him seriously, though, I see people who like look up to this guy in Monero, and it's like, nah, dude, he's a piece of garbage, and he scammed a bunch of people. I don't really care if he lived a libertarian lifestyle, you know, where he has his own private island and he never paid taxes or whatever. It's like, yeah, but he also scammed a bunch of people, and I think that's actually worse. You know, there's kind of this whitewashing, you know, there's definitely some revisionism there after he passed away. I don't want people to think I'm pissing on his grave or anything. I don't think he would really have given a shit if I had said this stuff back in the day. But yeah, that's my rant on McAfee. All right, with that out of the way, let's get to some of our sponsors on here at Anti-Moonboy News. And our first sponsor is Monero.forum. Monero.forum is my favorite message board to go and talk about Monero. That's right, a message board. Do you guys remember those? I love those back in the day, and we got a nice boomer message board for you guys to go to. I recently have joined Monero.forum to help them grow the forum. You know, essentially, I'm writing there every day. I'm going to be posting content there every day. I'm not going to be flooding the message board necessarily, but I'm going to be posting comments, discussions, and this is what we need. We need people discussing, you know, Monero, peer-to-peer cash, things happening in the ecosystem. We don't want that on Reddit. Reddit sucks. You know, it served its purpose for a little while, but we need alternatives. So go to Monero.forum and sign up today. Next up, we got AnonRaffle.com. AnonRaffle is the best raffle site for Monero. It's got a great look. It's got sound effects, dorky sound effects. I'm a big fan of those sound effects. I've mentioned that every time I talk about this website. We need more sites with sound effects. But it's a very easy to use website. You just go there, you click on some squares, you send Monero, and you wait for the raffle to fill. And once it fills, they immediately raffle it off. But if you match the block hash of the most recent Monero block, you win. How cool is that? And they also sell firearms. Now, hold on. Don't jump to conclusions yet. It's legal. The United States, there are certain states where you can actually buy firearms. So you can actually raffle Monero for firearms. AnonRaffle.com. Check them out today. And third, we got Orange Friend. Oh, we love Orange Friend. It's just a really great directory for different on-ramps and VPNs and wallets and all these different services. And what's pretty cool, not a lot of people know about this, they have the Intercambio Simplex app. Intercambio is kind of like their more hardcore swap site, and they have a built-in bot that you can have with Simplex. You can just type in a little command in Simplex and get Monero. How cool is that? Check out my video on that. It's on my channel somewhere. But Orange Friend, they've been doing a lot for the ecosystem, and I forgot to even mention this until now. They are organizing MoneroCon 2026. So that makes them the best. Okay, I mean, how awesome is that? We weren't gonna have MoneroCon. Now they're organizing MoneroCon. So check out OrangeFriend.com today. All right, fourth up, we got WebWipe. Oh yeah, we love WebWipe here on Anti-Moonboy News. And why wouldn't we? Okay, they provide a great service where they find all the information about you on the internet and they stalk you. They find they will know exactly where you're going every day. They know your mother's maiden name. They're gonna hack into everything. I'm kidding. No, what they're going to do is they're gonna get that information and they're gonna turn around and say, hey, we can find this. Let's get this removed. And then, you know, that's super important today when, you know, we have all this metadata and all these footprints that you can find by just going on a search engine. So with WebWipe, they will, you know, you can go and get a consultation with them and you can find out a product that you guys will agree with on how you can improve your privacy, and they'll go on and help you out. So check out webwipe.io today for your privacy needs. And last but not least, we have Unstoppable Wallet. So Unstoppable Wallet, they've been around for a while. They're pretty much tried and true. And they offer many different cryptocurrencies that you can throw on your wallet, including, of course, Monero. And I was told that they are going to be integrating ThorChain with Monero support. And as you guys know, you know, this is going to be a big deal. ThorChain is going to be implementing Monero soon. And so you will be able to do swaps, decentralized swaps with that, with Unstoppable Wallet. So how cool is that? They also have a swap service, which you can find at swap.unstoppable.money, where, again, it's you can swap in and out of different cryptocurrencies. And we like to swap. We're big swappers here on Anti-Moonboy. We don't like to leave a trace, and that's their entire thing on Unstoppable Wallet. So go to unstoppable.money. You can download that on your phone today. So thank you, Unstoppable Wallet. All right, well, those are the sponsors of the week. And I do want to say this real quick. I know that listeners of my show have noticed I've had more advertisements lately. To be clear, we're going to be capping it at 5. I think 5 sponsors is a good cutoff for what we are offering with Anti-Moonboy News. So basically, at about 20 or so minutes for each podcast, I'm going to be dumping in the paid programming, and it's going to try. I'm going to try to shoot for like exactly 5 minutes. So if you're streaming, you know, on an MP3. You can use that information how you wish, but you better check out my, the services, because I support them. They're great products and services and stuff, and you should too. And I try to have fun with the, the ad reads. I don't want it to just be the same thing every single time. That's boring. And yeah, that's pretty much it. And you know, maybe one day we'll have some sort of, deal where I have some sort of like subscription service, but. You know, for now, I'd rather just keep things free and also get something back in return to help the channel, right? So, thanks for understanding, guys. Next up, we are talking about the Pied Piper, Michael Saylor. Yes, indeed. Well, he's been having a rough time lately. People are starting to turn on him. And he knows it. He's starting to feel the heat. He's still drawing in crowds, though. It's not, the heel turn has not fully come to fruition yet, but he's starting to feel the heat. And so they had their earnings call for Strategy recently, and this is from CoinDesk. Strategy posts a $12.54 billion quarter one loss on declining Bitcoin price. So Strategy having another brutal decline. It's not that surprising, because the only asset that they own is Bitcoin. And Bitcoin, well, it went down. So, you know, really, this company's price, yes, it is a reflection of Bitcoin, at least sort of, because the stock is also dependent on the company staying afloat. And that is the real problem here. And we're going to get into this because there's been some recent developments with their framing of how they're going to be paying dividends. But if you weren't aware, Strategy, they don't actually have any revenue that they're bringing in. They don't have any like services that they're selling. Their revenue is from people buying their stocks. And then to entice more people to buy stocks, they sell these preferred stocks, which are basically, as Saylor has put it, yield coins, where it's a stock that you get an annual payment from in the form of a dividend. And they're using that money to pay not only for more Bitcoin, but also the dividends. So again, the money that's coming in is being used to pay dividends and buy Bitcoin. That's it. That's how they're making their money. So obviously the problem is, what if the money stops? What if it stops coming in? It's like, well, they're going to have to sell some Bitcoin. That's the only way. And so anyways, this leads us to this past week during this earnings call, where Michael Saylor actually admits that they're going to sell Bitcoin if they have to. I think here's one quote. "We will probably sell some Bitcoin to pay a dividend just to inoculate the market, just to send the message that we did it." Here's another quote. "You buy Bitcoin with credit, you let it appreciate, and then you sell Bitcoin to pay the dividend." Now, that right there is the mask is off right there. That he's actually, what we're experiencing is this thing called trickle truth, where he's kind of slowly telling people that this is just a freaking operation to get dumb people to throw money at him. This is the start of it. We're starting to see them switch because they're starting to realize, yeah, we're gonna have to sell some Bitcoin. And once they sell some Bitcoin, there's gonna be a pretty negative reaction in the market. Why wouldn't there be? You know, for the past several years, we have heard time and time again, never sell your Bitcoin. Sell your kidneys. Remortgage your home if you have to. Buy as much as possible. And now Saylor's like, we need to sell Bitcoin for dividends, for digital credit. You know, it's like, his stupid followers are all kind of like, huh? But you know, Saylor uses big words so they can't really follow along. Like when he says to inoculate the market. No, what they're trying to do is they're trying to like slowly sell off, not to fucking piss everybody off, and to try to do it like in a PR friendly way, right? Because they have to. And because Saylor is such a greedy fraud, he's going to just keep making these yield coins. He's going to keep pumping these things out. Because he can't get enough of it. You know, they're making so much money off this. And it's going to reach a point where eventually those dividends are going to be pretty high and they're not going to be getting much revenue coming in. And by revenue, I mean new people buying it. And once that switch happens, the music stops. And then they're going to really start selling Bitcoin. And I don't really think Saylor really fucking cares about Bitcoiners. Obviously, he doesn't because he's peddling this scheme. So that's the future strategy. Now, I don't think this is going to happen over the course of a year. Unless there's like a big financial crisis. Possible. With the whole Iran thing. But this is something that's going to happen over time because he's adding more and more dividends. And as you increase that, it just makes it harder and harder to pay off. So anyway, let's listen to Saylor. This is him talking about selling Bitcoin to pay dividends. And just, you have to admire his language he's using too, because he's trying to be so careful not to say the wrong thing. He's doing this in a PR friendly way. So let's take a listen.
The point here is there are occasionally some short narratives. People would say things like, well, you know, if they sell the Bitcoin, that's bad for the business, or it proves the business doesn't work or something. But, you know, we look at it as if you're a real estate development company and you bought land for $10,000 an acre and you sold it at $100,000 an acre, and then you bought more land with the profit, no, you know, or if you sold it $100,000 an acre to pay some interest expense on debt that you used to buy more land, nobody would say that that's bad for the price of real estate, and no one would say that that proves the business doesn't work. Real estate development companies literally exist to buy land cheap and sell it expensively. we're like a Bitcoin development company. We buy it cheap, we sell it dear. Where do the dividends come from? Capital gains fund credit dividends, right? That is the essence of the business. We invest in digital capital, Bitcoin. The capital gains from the investment fund the credit dividends. They will do it in perpetuity if the capital appreciates at that break-even rate. And it turns out that sometimes we will sell a Bitcoin derivative because it's in the best interest of the company, but it's not necessary. This chart really illustrates that you can strip the business down to something very simple. You buy Bitcoin with credit, you let it appreciate, and then you sell Bitcoin to pay the dividend. And as long as you're issuing credit in excess of the break-even point, then this business works and grows forever.
Yeah, it works and it grows forever. Yeah. Because one thing he's not confronting, and a lot of people are missing, okay, a lot of people in crypto are not getting this, is that we are seeing diminishing returns. And so with diminishing returns happening at a greater and greater rate, I guess, like compare the bull runs over the past decade. And it's a noticeable drop-off. And I've said this time and time again. When you, like, call this out to the, you know, the laser eye guys who have these just insane projections, you can go back to the 2020 bull run, and people were calling for, like, Bitcoin at 300,000. Like, 100K was the floor. It was the floor. And, you know, we breached 100K this time, but we didn't go that much higher. We were well below Strategy's projections, and they had to revise them multiple times. I have videos on that as well. So they're missing their projections every single time, but their company is built on this promise that they're going to just keep growing over time. It's not looking good for Strategy in the long run, maybe in the medium term too. This is probably the smartest thing they can do for what's worth, start selling now instead of waiting for the bull run, I think. But on the other hand, though, I don't know how the market's going to react. And, you know, they might just do it quickly now just to rip the Band-Aid off and then not do it again for a while. Part of the reason they can get away with that is, as far as I know, they're not on the hook until like 20. I think, yeah, they have like 18 months before they're on the hook, or it's probably less than that. It's probably like 15 months before they're like actually on the hook. And they have some cash reserves as well, right? Because that's true. They have Bitcoin. They also have cash or USD reserves as well. But once those are tapped, they're going to have to start selling Bitcoin. And I think they're starting to realize that, well, during the next bull run, we don't want to start selling Bitcoin, because that's when, you know, people are going to negatively react. All right, let's read this tweet here. This is from this guy, the great Martis. He's on X. You probably have seen this guy. He makes some good tweets. And he says, if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And so he's got a chart here. And it talks about different things that are part of this company. The classic Ponzi scheme. How Saylor's scheme compares to it and the similarity between the two. Okay. So the first aspect here says funding new returns. We've gone over this. The classic Ponzi scheme pays early investors with money from new investors. Saylor's strategy pays high dividends, about 11.5% on Stretch preferred shares, largely via new share issuances, preferred plus common stock. So very similar. Reliance on continuous inflows. This is the second aspect. For the classic Ponzi scheme, it needs constant new money to keep going. For Saylor's company, it depends on ongoing capital raises, billions via STRC, which is the preferred share, convertibles, at-the-market offerings, to buy more Bitcoin and service obligations. Similarity level, very high. It's the same thing. They need to keep making up new shit, get people coming in. The third aspect, underlying yield source. The classic Ponzi scheme has little to no economic activity, fake returns. With Saylor strategy, Bitcoin itself produces zero cash yield, dividends funded by issuance or eventual BTC sales. And that's another thing, too. He mentioned real estate as an example. I don't know if you were paying attention during that clip. He's like, oh, well, you know, Bitcoin is digital capital, digital real estate. It's like you're a real estate agent, you know. And the thing is, like, if you're a real estate agent, you rent out the property, you actually do get returns from that. You don't get that with Bitcoin, though. You're just holding on to it. So they have to make up these schemes. Growth depends on price appreciation. It's the next aspect. It collapses if new money slows, as the classic Ponzi scheme. And Saylor's strategy, it works beautifully only while Bitcoin rises fast enough to attract more buyers and support premium valuations. Very similar. And, you know, the thing with that, too, is Bitcoin's becoming boring. It's not as the 10x is. It's the past, right? We'll be lucky to break 175,000 next bull run. You know, you have all this coping about, you know, yeah, there's no longer a four-year cycle. I'm not so sure about that. We'll see, I suppose. We got a couple more here. The fifth aspect. Promised high returns. Classic Ponzi scheme, unrealistically high consistent returns. Saylor strategy says high yield preferred dividends of 8 to 11.5% plus leveraged Bitcoin upside. So this is the least similar. It's still pretty damn similar. But, you know, they do have these dividends, and I think they're going to keep raising the dividends as well to bring in more money. And so to do that, you get crazier and crazier dividends to draw on that cash, you know. The sixth similarity, vulnerability to slowdown dies when inflows stop or redemptions rise. With Bitcoin, if Bitcoin stalls, new issuance dries up or market cap is lower than Bitcoin holdings, may need to sell Bitcoin to dilute heavily. And that's, you know, what we're seeing here. They're going to be, new issuance is just going to keep drying up and strategy is going to be stuck. And lastly, a feedback loop. In the classic Ponzi scheme, new money bids up the asset illusion. With Saylor's MicroStrategy, Bitcoin buys plus leverage push Bitcoin and MSTR price higher, easier to raise more capital, more Bitcoin buys. And this is very similar. And yeah, it's one of those things where during a bull run, Saylor looks like a genius, but right now he looks like a fucking fraud. And if the past is any indication, we're going to see more diminishing returns, and he's going to have to get more and more elaborate with this scam. And eventually he's going to have to sell. So, all right, for the next segment, we're going to be talking about the tremendous interview that took place between Douglas Tooman and Justin Berman. And I have to just come out and say it. This is a freaking killer interview. If you want to get up to date with what's going on with Monero, check this one out, because it goes into a lot of different details about many different Monero topics, and it covers them pretty darn well. So I'm going to do my best to summarize it for you guys to kind of give you an update, because it goes over view keys, full chain membership proofs, what's the holdup, when's it coming out, even Quantum as well. So there's a lot of different stuff to pick apart here. So let's dig in. So starting off, the first like 20 minutes is kind of skippable. They talk about like Cubic and like Zcash, thoughts on Zcash, not really that important. But then it gets to the view keys. And this is something that the Monero newbie, or really just like newbies in general, they fall into these FUD pits of despair where they like completely misinterpret something, and then they think the world is ending. And with these view keys, I got like messaged about this. I guess there's been people freaking out on like Reddit, for example. Lots of AI slop being posted. And it's kind of just like, dude, chill. Like, Monero has always had view keys and it's always been vulnerable to this. Like, it's kind of just like what you're saying isn't really a problem at all. And not only that, there's other ways to do it and probably easier ways to do it. So here's the summary real quick with view keys right now. You only can view Monero going into a wallet, but that's it. However, with poison outputs, you actually can't see when people send transactions because you can see the change, re-enter the wallet, and you'll know that, oh, that was a send, okay? So you can actually already right now, like, monitor somebody with a view key if you really wanted to. So, like, the criticism of the new view keys being bad is that exchanges are going to suddenly relist Monero and say, hey, just give us your view keys and everything will be fine. And yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Like, if you're really that hardcore, why the fuck are you using KYC exchanges? Like, oh no, they're requiring me to give them information. All right, I won't use Monero then on a KYC exchange. Wow, I just solved everything, you know? So that's the first thing. So, I mean, yeah, it's a nothing burger. And the other thing, too, is these view keys do a lot of good, okay? First off, they improve multisig. I mean, it just makes multisig easier. And this is in the interview, you know, Justin Berman brings up that this is really important for, like, hardware wallets and multisig. Like, it just makes the underlying infrastructure for Monero easier to use because with hardware wallets, especially, they have to jump through hoops to have Monero work on them for reasons because Monero isn't like other cryptocurrencies because of the privacy by default and other things. I think he mentioned like key images. It's a mess. That being said, though, with these view keys, it makes it so much easier and it improves it. So, I mean, the view key situation, it's all FUD by people who are like posting AI slop and it's really bottom of the barrel stuff. So he confronts that early on. He shits on Thorchain. That was hilarious. Berman takes a dump on Thorchain, saying that it's funny that they vibe coded it, which is true. I'm of the opinion that Thorchain will probably be very positive for Monero, but I would not trust that. They're going to get exploited somehow. If they vibe coded something, I don't know, man. I wouldn't trust that at all. Can you imagine, like, putting up, like, staking, like, you know, like, $10,000 plus worth of XMR and it just gets drained one day because of some fucking exploit that wasn't picked up? Now, of course, that can happen to any protocol, but, like, here you're trusting literally AI and then, yeah, they're testing it now, but anyways. Next up, they mentioned the beta stress net and how it's going very well. And I guess the alpha stress net, it took a long time, but they got a lot of like positive work done with that. They were able to like really cover a lot of ground. And this is probably not going to last that long. That being said, apparently there are only like 10 to 20 peers who are like using it actively. So we got to pump those numbers up. I'm going to make a video this week about getting this set up because, I mean, they're just looking for people to use it and to find bugs. You don't even have to really do anything. You just download it, send a few test transactions. Cool, you know. But you might find some stuff. So it's really easy to do, and I'm going to have a whole, you know, video on that. I guess the reason the alpha stress test was so long was because of some out-of-memory issue. He mentioned this. And apparently it would crash after a period of time, no matter on what you were running. And I guess it was caused by how it was caching memory. So fixing that was a really big deal. And that's why, you know, they're doing all these stress test nets. Now, when version 19 does come, though, you're going to need to make sure you're pointing to a node that is running the hard fork. So version 19 is going to be the full chain membership proof hard fork. And you have to make sure you are using a node that's running it. So when the hard fork does happen, you are going to have people who are connected to nodes that are outdated. And there's going to be like a lag period where people need to update everything. This is just kind of how hard forks work. So we're going to have a couple days of, you know, some, you know, rough waters getting people onboarded. But once everyone is like on the same page, it's going to be awesome because it's full chain membership proofs and, you know, it's giga-based. Now he did say sync times were increasing, due to various reasons with the curve trees. So that sucks. I don't think it's going to be that awful, but you don't like to see a UX hit, but this is a trade-off, you know, better privacy for longer sync times, I'm down. And it's not just better privacy. It's like the best of the best, you know, so. He also said that the blockchain lock is going to stay. So the 10 block lock that Monero has. And part of the reason with that is if there is some sort of reorg, it screws up the trees, and that does make things a lot more complicated. Now, next up, he mentions, and this I thought was very interesting. So they brought up the whole proof of stake thing with Monero, and it's very controversial. I don't think it's going to pass. But he brought up this idea where they would actually introduce proof of stake with no rewards. And it was purely based on people who want to just help the network. I thought that was interesting. I've never considered that. But what if that happened, where people just kind of ran, you know, nodes with Monero stake towards it or something, and then you could like help protect the network, you know? And I gotta say, that's an interesting idea. I don't think they're gonna go for it, but you know, if you have like a lot of cold storage Monero and you want to protect your investment, that does make a little sense, right? So I don't know how that would work, but I think that was kind of cool. So yeah, the other issue too, transactions are going to take longer to send with more UXTOs. And he said, you know, it's like 3 seconds more per UXTO or something like that. So if you're like sweeping together P2 pool funds, that could take a couple minutes to actually make the transaction. So that kind of sucks. All right, now then, let's get to the part that everyone wants to talk about. When's it going to happen? And he, you know, he explains all the different things that they have left. And he's also very apologetic because he doesn't like giving out dates because they were wrong in the past. And it looks like they're going to be probably wrong again. And that it's probably going to be the final quarter of 2026, if not 2027. And he says that he would be very upset if they weren't done by 2027, but that's just, that's what's happening. So what's the holdup? Research audits. These are all in well ahead on schedule, so that's great. The beta stress net, obviously, that's also in progress. Because they did a lot of work on the alpha stress net already, probably good. So if you want to increase the, you know, work done on that, you know, check out my video later this week. We're going to download the stress net and have fun with that, okay? The other thing, and this hasn't happened yet, but they're about to go through with this, is audits of the code. So for the past couple of years, Berman and Jeffro, they've been making the actual coding for this to merge to the Monero consensus. That needs to be audited as well. They're taking this very seriously, guys. We don't want to have some sort of vulnerability. They're just, you know, crossing their T's, dotting their I's. They're just making sure they get everything done in the right way. And I mean, the other things too, hardware wallets need to integrate the new code. Multisig is also being worked on by Ko. I guess Ko is back. He's a longtime Monero guy who's kind of not around for a little bit, but I guess he's now back. He's working on multisig. And I think there's another thing too that I'm forgetting that I didn't write down, but that's the core stuff that's being worked on right now. So I'm now going to throw my hat in for quarter four, 2026. I think we get it done by then. Obviously there's a lot of excitement. I don't think they're going to find anything on these audits. You never know though. So just got to make sure everything is running smoothly and we're almost at the finish line. See, I'm kind of just recapping this interview. It really was full of just really great content. So I encourage people to check out the whole thing. You know, Berman's really well-spoken. There are two other topics they touched on quickly. One was that FUD article that was making the rounds on Twitter, which I didn't even talk about on the show because it wasn't worth responding to. But, you know, they brought up the fact, though, that there's concerns about, well, what if a rollback needs to happen. And this is something that is just a case-by-case basis, which Justin Berman points out. it's kind of like if we reach a point where there was a hidden inflation bug that's been going on for several months, there's not really much you can do in that situation. As a community, we have to come together and try to figure something out. And there's so many different, variables to this in terms of the timing of this, how long it's been going on, if we can even see it. There's a lot of different, variables. All I can say is I trust these devs. They're very intelligent people, and I'm sure they'd reach the best conclusion going forward. But again, though, if you are concerned about this, don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? Last thing I'm going to say here, quantum concerns. So he had talked about quantum for a little bit, talked about the proposal from Tevador right now. And I guess right now, the quantum they are looking to put forward would only protect the amounts of XMR. So people can still, print Monero, for example. So it doesn't really solve everything. And the quantum stuff, I'm confused by it. It's like kind of all over the place. All you need to know is that they are obviously working on it. So this is like preliminary research is being done. Tevador is doing a lot of great work on it, and they're getting stuff done. So anyways, check out that interview between Justin Berman and Doug. It was a good one. Had a lot of fun listening to that. All right, last thing we're going to talk about today is Wygoo. Oh, boy. I don't even want to fucking talk about these guys, man. And so, they shut down during the Korea hack. They got back up. And they make this post here with the most obnoxious title ever. Hold on, let me pull it up. And the title here just says, "What actually is decentralization? A common criticism I get is that Wygoo isn't decentralized." Let me clear something up for you guys. Yes, Wygoo is decentralized. And then he goes on to say, like a few lines later, "The only aspect that isn't decentralized is the XMR custody." And as Uvern XMR points out, so the main aspect, that's what we're talking about. It's not decentralized because the custody of the funds is centralized. It's not fucking rocket science. I don't know, man. They have these guys on Twitter. They paid off, and they're terrible at defending this company. I wouldn't touch it. Unless you use Hyperliquid and whatever, but they're saying like all the wrong things right now and just being like idiots. What they need to do is they need to come out of the closet, okay? They need to say, they need to admit that they're not decentralized. Okay, I'm centralized. You'll be so much happier, Wygoo, if you just come out of the centralization closet and admit that you're centralized. There's so many different Monero projects that are like you. You won't be alone, Stop fucking LARPing. Okay, let's get to the Super Chats. XMRChat.com/Xenu. If you want to donate, we got two this week. The first one's from No Name, who gives 0.01 XMR. I appreciate that, No Name. And they say, "The internet depends on government-run infrastructure from physical to transport layers with inherent flaws. Decentralized and anonymity tech remain limited by the centralized base. What solutions exist to overcome it?" Oh, thank you very much, No Name. It's what we cover on the show, really. Like, first off, open source non-proprietary software. You want to like surround yourself with as much of that as possible. Know the points that you're entering that are centralized proprietary slot. Like when I go on Twitter, because I do use Twitter, it's like, okay, I know that everything's being monitored right now. You know what I mean? You just kind of got to know what you're doing, what information you're revealing. You want to just keep studying like different things. The thing is, like, we have to use the ClearNet, because it's the infrastructure is indeed there. But it's like easy to kind of just be in the weeds. And that's kind of like the main like OPSEC thing that is kind of like taught to people. It's like you want to understand everything, and you also like you want to just kind of be part of the noise, not to stick out, to appear like you're aloof, but you actually know what's going on, And so, with the anonymity tech that gets around it, cryptography, you know, encryption. This is kind of why we're here, because you can't, it won't reveal who's behind it unless you choose to reveal that. And that's obviously really important for many different types of use cases. So you can actually build decentralization and anonymous communities on top of government-run infrastructure. It's kind of why we're here. All right. Well, thank you very much, No Name. And next up, we got a donation from anonraffle.com. Shout out. He's a sponsor. He gives 0.015 XMR. Thank you very much. He says, Xenu, 0.04 XMR buys you the remaining 40 squares in the pocket change raffle. Here's 0.015 to get you started. I bought in on this one. May the best DGen win. Ha, ha, ha. Unfortunately, that raffle is already over. I went to go check. And anonraffle.com did win, by the way. He's a bastard. But I will pledge that I am going to put 0.015 XMR towards it.
Beep boop. What is a raffle? Beep boop.
Yeah, you haven't been around in a while. Yeah, well, I mean, you pick a square and you click on it. And if it lands on it, you win.
Beep boop. That sounds interesting. I picked the number 12. Beep boop.
I mean, yeah, I could do that. 12 is a good number.
Beep boop. I feel something in my veins, tingling, excitement, beep boop.
Beep boop. I believe robot may need to program to not be a degenerate gambler, just like you definitely did not program me to be in love with you. Beep boop.
I kind of think so too, Bella. I kind of think so too. Do you want a number?
Beep boop. Fantastic. I would like to pick the number 99 in honor of the great one. Beep boop.
All right. Well, we'll do it. Anyways, guys, thanks for tuning in to Anti Moonboy News. As usual, you can go to xmrchat.com/Xenu to donate. I'm out. See you.